What's the secret to writing a great play? Characters, plots, wisdom, honesty. It's all of these things and, of course, more. But when we sit down to create a play, how do we put it to paper effectively? How, when the last page is done, do we know that we have a viable piece of work? While ultimately, this is subjective, there are many ways to approach creating a truly effective piece of theater. In playwriting, less truly is more. As a writer and actor, you are creating the essence of life, just as you would with your own children. You must allow them to be themselves. In my estimation, a good play says something to humanity about humanity. Family, love, death, these are the things that we all deal with and with which we identify. When a director can visualize the story and an actor passionately wants to interpret the role, you have a chance at theatrical magic. Jet Black Sunrise by Michael Fegley and Daniel Amenda is just that play. Jet Black Sunrise is an original theatrical presentation which brings to life the soaring, often enigmatic work of America's great poet, Walt Whitman. An intimate hour staged in the very simple way tells the story of a traveler, a former soldier struggling to grasp his place in his country, his place among mankind, and ultimately his place in all of time. This is WDIY 88.1 Allentown, Lehigh Valley Public Radio, and you are tuned to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I remain George Miller, and along with my wife co-host Kate Scuffle, we chat with theater artist Michael Fegley, actor and playwright, and with Daniel Amenda, playwright and director of Jet Black Sunrise. But my big question is, where does that fantastic title come from? Michael?
Well, George, thanks for having us here today. Jet Black Sunrise is the title of a piece of Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass. We use nothing but the poetry and the play from the original 1855 first edition version of Walt Whitman. And in that, there were a few breaks, but there were no separate poems or pieces. But over the course of many editions of his work, and then the way that we look at it today, we've broken it up so that this can be a poem, this can be a poem, and this passage is here is a poem. And those passages, some of them are really these recollections that he has, almost these memories. And we like to look at those. Dan calls them songs, you know, these pieces. And some of them are memories that are very soothing. And then there are other memories of war. And this one in particular, the Jet Black Sunrise, is a passage about the slaughter of 412 American soldiers by Santa Anna's army that we all recall the Alamo. But Whitman says, but hear now the tale of this slaughter, the Jet Black Sunrise. And that becomes a very important part of what we're doing here in our piece.
Great. Wow. I didn't realize that. Thank you.
And I'm curious, why Whitman? Why now? What was the inspiration for the piece initially? What was the impetus?
Well, I think you have to look at Whitman by Fire and go back as far as that began. Because what began there for me was simply an idea, a germination of an idea, based on the fact that when my brother was dying, I had read Whitman to him in his hospital room and noticed the impact on myself and on him. And I felt there was real value in bringing these words to life in a very primitive form. So Whitman by Fire was simply the forest and a fire and people gathered around that fire in a tradition that came initially from the Greeks, really, and having the Homeric myths sung to an audience in a village. And America didn't really have that kind of tradition in it. But here was the American Odysseus, really, a poet who managed to sum up our character and our possibilities in great detail. And I thought it was of real value. And then Mike and I explored the idea of putting that into an indoor format, which became impossible.
You can't have a roaring fire in the middle of a theater.
And just to clarify for our listeners, Whitman by Fire was the earliest incarnation of the piece, and it was outdoors.
It was outdoors.
An audience gathered with you around a fire.
And we'll be performed this summer, you know, more information to come. Mm-hmm. But this is kind of its companion, right?
So we're looking, sister piece.
Yeah. So we're looking at Whitman's own struggle in this piece, which I think correlates with everybody's struggle today. You know, I mean, I like to look at us and say, wow, you know, we're all kind of in PTSD right now with the political climate and the climate, in the Middle East and all of that. And it's really, I think, taxing on people in a way they don't really understand. And it can kind of put you out. It can kind of really deepen whatever sleepiness or ingrained habits you have as a kind of a solve on what's what is human difficulty. And Whitman implores you to wake up. Mm-hmm. He's saying, wake up. This isn't who you are. You have other possibilities. Despite your experiences, positive, negative, they are there to teach you something and lead you to a possibility of becoming more conscious in your daily existence. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true for anybody on any side of the political spectrum right now. It doesn't have to do with a political point of view. It has to do with your own possibilities as a human being and to overcome the difficulties that are ahead of you. Martin Luther King said, if you want to change the world, change yourself. Mm. And that's a direct Whitman kind of philosophy.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because before we came on the air, we were talking a little bit about Michael. You had said, or reminded us that, in fact, Whitman, in the moment of writing Leaves of Grass and the America he was living in, was a deeply
divided
by America, and also making choices about the future of what the American dream was, or who we were.
In 1855, we were on the brink of civil war. Everyone had their own tribe, you know, protecting their own self-interests, just like we are today. And he viewed his work as a gift for his American brothers and sisters that, you know, this is really who we are. This is he believed in the dream of what America could be, because that was the dream of what any human, anybody could be.
Mm-hmm. And Michael, for you, what drew you to Whitman?
Well, Daniel, when he approached me, I was working on the Ballad of Trayvon Martin down at the New Freedom Theater in Philadelphia, a very powerful piece. And Dan said he had this idea about it, and I came to explore the thought of it and looked into Walt Whitman at the time. And I was so moved reading Whitman again and then realizing, you know, how it made me feel, you know, 21 years old again. You know, that it was, this is like when I discovered Ralph Waldo Emerson for the first time and Emily Dickinson. Mm-hmm. This was so powerful. And I thought, well, yes, this moves me so much that we could work together. And then we stitched the Whitman by Fire piece together, and we both picked our favorite parts, and we all had wonderful things. And then Whitman by Fire is a beautiful show. Mm-hmm. And when we said, okay, well, now we have to do it indoors, you know, we need a commercially viable opportunity to put something out there that everyone can see so that it's not as difficult as finding a fire and finding going out into the woods. And so once we were trying to do that, it took us, I mean, we've been working on it for over a year, and stitching together what we could do, realizing that we wouldn't be able to do what we did before, that we had to approach it in a different way as we improvised through it and went through rehearsals after rehearsals and draft after draft and moving this and moving that and sampling the different pieces so that we can create an emotional through line that the actor could live out and be there present with us without it being a poetry reading. So as we did that, it became darker and darker and darker. Mm-hmm. And Whitman is very balanced with what is good and the unspeakable joys and the unspeakable sorrows. And that balance, when we started to scrape together all of the war memories and the darker parts that he normally balances in his work, but I scraped those things together and put those into passages themselves, that became very horrifying. Mm. And then having to balance that with these other thoughts and memories in his life, can he get himself back together, this broken man? Mm. Can he get himself back together so that he can continue his journey, or is he going to end it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Daniel, one of the things that interests me specifically is the dynamics between the actor and the director.
Mm.
And were there, I like to ask this question, were there issues between you and Michael that hit you that were so profound that it literally chilled you? I mean,
or discoveries, or
yeah, when you watch him do something that you've created together, and all of a sudden it works, and it works a second time, and a third time, and a fourth time. So something is there between the dynamics between the actor and the director.
Absolutely.
I would say that, too. Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Mike and I come from the same kind of theatrical background. We studied with the same acting teacher. We have a very common vocabulary in which to communicate, which makes things very easy. Mike would... You know, you give a direction to Mike, and then he'd make it better. And you would just like, you know, you're just blown away by somebody who's so willing and free to follow his impulses in any regard whatsoever without vanity or shame or humiliation, just that kind of freedom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, working in that way is such a pleasure because it's a way of working that both of us spent a lot of time learning under very difficult circumstances, and also just working together. Like, Mike had other commitments over the years, and I refused to go on without him. I said, no, I'm not doing this without Mike.
Right.
I need Mike, and there's nobody else who can do it the way I want it to be done that I know, and I'm not going to risk it.
Yeah, and I'd say working with Dan as an actor, it is the greatest experience for me. It's been the most difficult experience for me. I thought Whitman by Fire was going to be the most difficult thing I ever did. And then we've turned this up on its head and created this darker sister piece that is five times as hard.
Thank you for sharing that. We're chatting with Michael Fegley, creator, writer, actor, and Daniel Amenda, director and playwright, for Jet Black Sunrise, performed at the Bethlehem Ice House January 24th to the 26th, and then at February 21st to the 23rd at Easton's Nurture Nature Center. Other venues are to be announced. Incidentally, Jet Black Sunrise is a sister companion to the highly regarded Whitman by Fire that was performed at the National Recreation Area in the Poconos and at Onamkara Farm Selkie Theater in South Whitehall, both outdoors among the blades of grass. We shall be right back after this.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Arts Salon, WDIY 88.1, Many Choices, Real Voices. We're chatting with Daniel Amenda, the director and playwright, and with Michael Fegley, the playwright and actor for Jet Black Sunrise.
And before we move on, I just want to make sure that our audience knows where and when they can share Jet Black Sunrise with you guys. You open January 24th at the Ice House. Michael, can you tell me a little more about the dates and times and such?
Sure. So next week we're going to be over as part of Ice House Tonight, part of that series on the 24th, 25th, and 26th. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And those performances are at 8 p.m. And then also we'll be performing again. We're touring it to Easton at the Nurture Nature Center. And we'll be there February 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. Those shows are at 7 p.m., but those shows we're also inviting folks at 6 p.m. to enjoy the gorgeous galleries there, and then as a quiet overture to the performance that'll begin at 7 p.m. And tickets for all six shows are available right now at m8nebula.ticketleap.com. That's the letter M, the number 8, nebula.ticketleap.com.
Right. And you can find the information on Facebook, both with the Ice House postings, with M8 Nebula, I believe with Nurture Nature. So lots of information there. We'll be there at the Ice House. And before we move on, one other thing that we had talked about a little bit earlier, New York Times, Why We Need Walt Whitman. Piece that ran recently seems to be a bit of serendipity here, mm-hmm. or no, a little bit of a Lehigh connection as well.
Yeah, Mike, why don't you talk to sure. the Lehigh connection?
Yeah, the Lehigh connection there is Dan had forwarded me a piece of Why We Need Walt Whitman 2020. Beautiful opinion piece that was written, and I read through it, and it really spoke to Dan and to myself as to exactly what we're trying to accomplish here. And I sent it on to our dear friend, Professor Ed Whitley, who is a noted Whitman scholar right here in Lehigh University, and who's also a supporter of our work and saw Whitman by fire. And Professor Ed Whitley wrote me back and said, "Wow, this is written by one of my students. How fantastic." years later, so the effect that the Lehigh Valley has had and Professor Ed Whitley and what Whitman, bringing Whitman to that person, what that did for that man.
Yes.
And that's why it's important for all of us to, if we can move that on to the next person so that they can experience that.
Yes, I think it's one of those cases where sometimes unexpectedly, the zeitgeist is speaking back. And it was a very serendipitous thing that we had no idea was going to occur. And along those lines, I think that, Whitman, it's easy to read Walt Whitman and think, wow, he's got, this guy's just giving me the answers to everything. It seems like it's all the result of kind of a generalized happiness and joyfulness. And certainly everything's beautifully constructed, especially in the first version of Leaves of Grass. But when you search a little deeper, you're like, well, this can only be the result of really looking at oneself and really struggling to see one's flaws, one's assets, in a very objective way. And these events, like the war that happens, the war events he witnesses through this traveler's eyes, on one level, look very, very difficult to take. But you switch the scales, and it means something completely different. And I think the only way for a person to really understand who they are is to look at themselves, as Whitman says, as a multitude. Mm. We are multitudes. Mm-hmm. We are the result of our experiences, and whether they be positive or negative experiences. But there's something else as well. There's an immovable piece to us. There's something very solid, and that exists, I think, on par with a cosmological scale. And Whitman always looked at events from a cosmological level. Mm-hmm. And to remind oneself of, in a hermetic way, really, to remind oneself of one's place in the universe. And it's both big and small at the same time. And I've always been fascinated by that. And how do you switch scales in yourself? Mm-hmm. How do you really look at, something painful and look at it from a different scale and see the odd beauty in it, in a way? I'm not trying to denote war as something. Mm-hmm. It's not.
Yeah,
it's a tragic event, and it's results merely from man's misinterpretation of other men, really. I think, in a way, all wars are religious. It becomes very difficult to separate oneself from events like that. But it's so important, because you take them as yourself, or you take yourself as being somewhat responsible for what's going on in front of you, or you see yourself in some perpetual victimhood, and it doesn't allow you the freedom to be who you're meant to be. You have to separate out, and that's very, very difficult to do, and I think that's the big point of Whitman's journey.
That's interesting because if I think of him, you know, as a typical person that might have read Leaves of Grass in school, think of it as a work, a book of, it's a work, mm-hmm. and there is an author. So that in take, you said it's not a poetry reading; it's more than that. So it sounds as like what you're talking about is personalizing that, like letting me in the audience see this is also a personal journey with the traveler or the
right.
narrator
absolutely.
That we're with that night.
Well, so that the audience can experience it in a theatrical way. Mm-hmm. You know, we all know in a theater, when the lights go down, that guy up there, he's murdering the king, and he represents us. You know, and so this traveler is there, and he's experiencing this, you know, in the moment for us. And that's what brings it there, I believe, yeah. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for myself, I, you know, it's somewhat selfish because I really look at, attempt to look at life and see myself as part of the problem. And how do I become part of the solution? And it's a daily struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And it really has a lot to do with putting your attention outside of yourself. And I think that this journey that Walt Whitman is on, he's really summed up in a very specific way to the American temperament, the journey of trying to be present in a moment and be of service to something greater.
And what you were saying before is that, you know, about the way people would normally read Whitman.
Right.
So putting this together as an experience, you know, it came together as a completely different experience with Whitman by Fire, and now it's a very different experience with Jet Black Sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
But that sampling, that taking a piece from here or a line from there or the beginning of this piece over here and then also then going back to that over here so that it creates, again, that emotional through line that, mm-hmm. that can be lived out, that sampling of it, to me, I think that's something that Walt Whitman would smile at, you know, as the founder of free poetry, you know, with you know, who just yeah. went in a completely different direction. He'd think that that was delightful, yeah. that you put this together in a free manner that was representing something else and still staying true to what his goals were.
And that conversation.
It seems to me that there are other pathways that you can also take for future productions as well.
Oh, you're asking if I'm going to write a third play?
I am, actually, yes. But there are different pathways that you could go, the way you've devised this piece from the other piece,
right.
or separate from the other
piece.
Isn't
the hallmark of great writing and great thinking?
Yes,
it never ends
absolutely.
Being a source to it.
And that's what I said before.
Bottomless.
These two sister pieces, you know, we use some of the same passages in the first piece as we do here. There's songs, if you will, and that's just like a band or when Rachmaninoff does a, you know, a version of Paganini, you know, that they do, and that's the different takes on that creates another different work of art.
Yes, because I remember specifically in Whitman by Fire that when you went into the forest, when you ran into the forest and we couldn't see you, but we could hear the words, we could hear the meaning, it was almost much more moving to me than when you were standing right by the fire. So there are different pathways that can be taken.
I'm sure you'll have, I hope, moments that are like that with this piece as well.
I mean, I just want to say one other thing about this is that, you know, Whitman in his poem about the jet black sunrise, in this song, if you were, he looks at the events and he's not on one side or the other, really. He sees himself as on both sides and sees himself as the killer and the victim and the observer. And, you know, normally you would think a piece like that, it would say this is the good side and this is the bad side. But he's really saying we're all of that. We're both killers and victims. And I know for myself and having seen my own behavior, that's true, right? I mean, let me think about somebody who's made me angry. They're not going to escape my internal life without being killed several times. You know, but it's a metaphor, right? It's a metaphor for how we are. And I think what Whitman is saying is the biggest mistake you can make toward anyone else is to assume that they're acting with intentionality as opposed to reacting mechanically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. you're making them responsible for things they're not really responsible for.
It's a shame that we're almost out of time. It's a fascinating conversation. I would strongly suggest to our listeners This is a unique and original piece. You have two opportunities in the next 2 months to share in, and I think it's really an important part of our conversation as a people right now. And we're so joyful and grateful for you guys to bring this to us as an audience.
Yeah. Yes. We've been chatting with, of course, Daniel Amenda, the playwright and director of Jet Black Sunrise, and also with Michael Fegley, the actor and playwright. And I just encourage people to get out and see this wonderful piece. It will stay with you for a long time because Whitman by Fire is still there with me. And I'm gonna just check on it when I see this piece. So we want to thank you for...
And again, m8nebula.com. Right. Yep. Or pardon me, m8nebula.ticketleap.com. Yep.
Great. We want to say special thanks, too, to Neil Heber, our operations director, who's our technical engineer tonight. Thank you very much for being with us. This is Lehigh Valley Arts Salon.